Hello, you could be listening to these in any order, but you might like to know that in terms of recording, this is the first of our short series of European Crucible podcasts. Now, it's not exactly high concept. In each podcast, we're going to meet members of one of the many multidisciplinary collaborative projects that first came together at European Crucible. And as well as finding out about the projects, how they came together, what the goals are, how much progress they've made, whether they've managed to attract any funding, and so on, we're also going to try to get a little background on the team members and their own diverse areas of research. Well, that is the general idea, but it's a conversation, so we'll see where we get to. We're starting, although you listener may not be, with the project Mavka, Co-Creative Gamified Storytelling for Trauma. I'll try to unpack what all that means, but I can promise it is a tale worth telling for more reasons than one. And let's begin at the beginning by getting each of the contributors to introduce themselves and say a little bit about who they are and their own research areas. And first up, let's hear from Carolyn.
Hello there, I'm Carolyn Jess Cook. I'm a reader in creative writing at the University of Glasgow. I'm a poet, a novelist, and I write across various genres.
And what's your particular research area at the moment outside of this collaboration?
Well, my research area is in the field of creative writing for mental health. So this is very much tied into that. I'm very interested in looking at creative writing strategies for mental well-being and to help recovery from trauma.
Also at the University of Glasgow, Dr. Mathieu Chollet.
Hi, so I'm a lecturer in the School of Critical Science. I am interested in how we interact in virtual worlds, so with virtual characters or with others in virtual reality in particular. And I also look at how we can look at nonverbal behavior from people automatically with AI and other means in these worlds.
And what's the most interesting challenge on the horizon for you in terms of your own research?
Oof, that's quite a big question.
I like big questions.
I think there's a big shadow looming over all of people doing AI in this field now. It's the arrival of these big technologies, so you ChatGPT and the like, and how we can actually control them. And I want to say control the hype over this, and how can we use this in actual interesting ways, so generative AI in
It's
this world.
interesting, isn't it? Because we're kind of reaching the point where more possibilities are appealing daily, but more fears are also appearing daily. And so you have to get that balance correct.
Yeah, absolutely. Exactly. I think it's both absolutely fascinating, and using this both as a lay user and an expert, you both see the real potential and also all the potential harms. And so, yeah, it's obviously something that's on a lot of our minds.
Okay, we're going to cross to the other side of Scotland now and Harriet Watt, where we will find Mel.
Hi, I'm Mel McKendrick. I'm an associate professor in psychology, and my research area is in digital tools for mental health. So that might involve personalized interventions, working with nonverbal behaviors as well, looking at sensory metrics, for example.
And you're the capacity lead on something called Mind unexpectedly with two Ds.
Yes, it's the mental illness and neurodevelopmental, neurodegenerative disorders theme in our Global Research Institute for Health and Care Technologies at Heriot-Watt University. So I'm the capability lead for that theme.
And lastly, and most exotically from my current perspective, Igor.
Hi there, I'm Igor Tereshenko from Ukraine. I am a researcher, and my particular interest is everything which concerning to artificial intelligence. And now I am concentrate on natural language processing and fake news detection. So this is my top topics.
Right. Do you think you can see a day where you will save us from fake news?
I believe it will be soon.
Good. And what is it like being an academic in Ukraine right now?
Actually, it's a combination of additional jobs. Like, you need, first of all, to manage the safety questions for sure. A few months ago, you also need to manage the base needs like electricity. So, I need to have a candle or something like that. But after that, we have a generator. But now it's, I believe, everything fine. Another part, it's a little bit complicated to make signs, especially on remote, just because you need a stable connection with now it's a problem. But you know, there is some kind of classes or such thinking situation, just because I have a lot of wonderful friends which helps from all over the world. Stuff was fixed not only by myself, but with the help of the researcher from different countries and university. But the lives go on, and everything depends on ourselves. And actually, if you're interested in science, you can do it in any situation and in any country, and without electricity also.
I like that optimism. Okay, well, first of all, I think we should establish why you each applied for Crucible, or how you indeed became entangled with Crucible. And Igor, I'll start with you on that.
It was actually a very big surprise for me, and it was actually a great possibility to communicate, to meet a lot of interesting people, a lot of interesting researchers, and to be a part of such interesting projects.
Next, Mathieu. How did you get entangled with Crucible?
Well, honestly, I think probably like most others, got an email, thought it was interesting, and applied. No, seriously, I was relatively new in Glasgow, so I come from France, as I'm sure you can surmise, as you can hear. and so I was relatively a recent hire at the University of Glasgow, and I thought this would be a great opportunity to meet other people in Scotland. And also, you know, as you move potentially from one position to the next, you always kind of think, oh, is this an opportunity for a new project, a new idea? So I thought this was the ideal place to brainstorm a bit and meet some other people.
Mel?
Yeah, I was actively looking at the time to develop some leadership skills. So I was looking for opportunities, and I came across the website, and I'd had some great experiences working on EU projects, so I was really keen to widen my research network to Europe as well.
And finally, Carolyn.
My research is interdisciplinary in nature, so I'm really keen to collaborate with folk working in different disciplines, with scientists. And I find that storytelling can offer a really compelling way to engage the public with research that might otherwise seem inaccessible stories. So I'm used to picking people's brains and finding ways to really disseminate very complex and interesting ideas in quite simple and graspable ways. So that's what excited me.
And what were the surprises and indeed the challenges of participation? Because particularly this is a European project, but you're meeting online. You're not physically in the same space.
Well, I would say from my point, I actually find that, you know, meeting online is very useful because it can enable us to do things quite quickly. And especially in Igor's case and Anna's case, you know, we're able to connect where we might otherwise have been prevented from meeting up. So I think there's been a lot of benefits to this sort of format of meeting.
Mathieu, what surprised you about the Crucible experience, if anything?
I thought the online nature would actually be quite bad, but I was surprised that it was really good. It worked well. One thing I thought would be terrible, and actually I loved, was the sort of speed research dating experience, which... So they set you up in rooms and you have 3 minutes to chat with someone to the second. So you're, you know, if you're not done talking, you're disconnected and you're sent to the next person. Not the thing I would naturally run towards, you know, that kind of experience, but actually I thought it was very, very good. And I met a lot of different people that I wouldn't have talked to naturally. So in that sense, I guess the technical situation, I think really helped. It really forced you to meet a lot of people. I think that was very good.
And it liberates you from your own prejudices. If you had to sort of select, you might have found people who were more similar naturally. And then instead of going, look, I'll just take whatever gets thrown at me. And then you find yourself thinking, hang on, there's some common ground here.
Yeah, absolutely. I would say in events like this, you know, you congregate to the people that you understand, even if you try not to. There's a natural tendency to go see, okay, I go see the other computer scientist, or maybe the psychologist, because I tend to work with psychologists. But here I talk with all sorts of people in the arts and humanities and material sciences and so on. So that was great.
Igor?
So about the experience, it kind of a new challenge for me, but also a lot of surprise for, first of all, that how it was so domestic atmosphere during these crucible events, where the researcher can share their opinions, can very in easy way to propose brilliant ideas in, and without any kind of bureaucratic stuff. I actually like this way of science, of producing ideas, and of course the team building, and how it was easy to connect in teams and propose the ideas and propose the projects. Actually, some kind of fairy tale to scientists to be here from my side, because I never attend such kind of events before. And also it helps, you know, to be in new atmosphere, which quite separate from the war zone mentally in such psychology way, so just to have like a free breeze of something, of freedom or something like that.
So Crucible was a fairy tale you needed as well.
Yeah.
Mel, what was the big surprise for you, went from what you expected Crucible to be like to what it turned out to be like?
Well, I tend to go into these things without any expectations. I always go in with an open mind, because I generally find there's always something that you can take from these things. One meeting, one person, it will lead to something else. So I went in with, first of all, I spotted Matthew with some of the work that he'd been doing on social anxiety, which is an area I'm interested in. And then I realised I had a chat with Igor, I think, during one of the speed dating sessions. That was what surprised me, was I wasn't expecting somebody from Ukraine to be as part of it. And that presented a great opportunity, because I'm really interested in how people experience adverse events, how they are process emotions, and how we can build resilience around that. So I couldn't think of a more perfect opportunity that we were presented with there by Igor being part of the Crucible.
So did you almost instantly think, this is somebody there's good potential to collaborate with here?
Absolutely, absolutely. And then when I spoke to Caroline as well, it became really, obvious, the storytelling, the power of the storytelling for a situation just like this. So it was like it all kind of culminated, the stars aligned,
See, we're using fairy tale language as well, the stars aligned as well. And Caroline, was it the same thing for you? It was a very easy gravitation that pulled you all together.
Yeah, I mean, given that you only have 3 minutes, I actually think that's useful, because it can really, really focus conversations, which it did. And you become very, very set on finding out where the connections are immediately. So it felt very smooth. I think that was very much facilitated by the sort of online platform and just the organization of those speed dating kind of conversations. As I said, sometimes you can, if there's a vague set of parameters about what we're to do, it can draw things out longer. But because we had such kind of focused tasks, I think it helped us come together very, very quickly.
Yes, it's a very unacademic way of doing it in some ways, but actually it's tremendously useful, because you realise what you can do when you're forced to do things in 3 minutes, 2 minutes, half a day, create a presentation out of nothing. You can actually deliver that.
Exactly, yes. I think you're right about the unacademic way of doing things. Sometimes academia is famously protracted, but in this case, it was just very streamlined and very efficient.
Matthew, can you rewind us to when you went from thinking these are a bunch of people I'd like to work with to thinking this is the idea we want to work on? When was the Mavka part of this born?
Yeah, well, it's actually quite interesting what you said and the question you ask. I do remember starting these conversations, and I met a lot of people in all sorts of areas, and was like, I don't really see anything going. But I had clocked a few people, because we did also flash presentations before. It's like, okay, I'm definitely going to talk to Mel. It's like, this is going to be interesting. And I think we got connected, and she mentioned the idea of working with Igor. And I was like, I think in a split second, I was like, I see where this is going, and I see the story. So I was already quite interested. I think often we, in our labs, we do safe research, and we rarely have the opportunity to, let's say, have such a project that can have such an impact on something very real. And I was like, okay, this is something I need to go for. And then I think Mel also, so I guess it was Mel that really pitched the idea to me, mentioned Carolyn and the idea of integrating storytelling and story writing what we do with virtual characters and digital technologies. And really, I was absolutely sold at that point, yeah.
At this point, I think it would be useful for one of you to actually explain what Mavka is. Mel?
The idea of Mavka is that it will give children who are in Ukraine, but also more widely than that, who are experiencing trauma of some sort, a way to process their emotions that it takes it a little bit away from them. So the idea of it being built around fictional stories means that they're not having to go into that real trauma aspect of talking about their own experiences at that point. It gives them time to build up. And the idea behind it really is that the storytelling is one part of it that will then open up to being able to talk to maybe other people who are going through the same thing, to share their stories, and then ultimately work on with a virtual therapist before coming, being ready to actually explore those emotions more deeply with a real therapist. And it was something that Igor had said to me in that first meeting about the children not being able to really talk about their emotions. And that was where really that's what kind of got me thinking there must be something that we can do to help that aspect of helping them just ease into that process of being able to talk about it.
So it gives them a little bit of emotional distance, which enables them to maybe say something they wouldn't be able to say directly about themselves.
Exactly. Exactly.
So, Carolyn, can you talk me through how this would be for an individual child going through the Mavka experience?
Certainly. We wanted to make sure that, you know, we facilitate a way of talking about emotions, or not so much talking, but processing emotions and drawing upon experiences in a way that feels playful and experimental and accessible. So we really, we've created a creative writing kind of package for children to build a story that draws upon fairy tales that are located in Ukraine. So it's using these existing stories in a way that kickstarts other ideas and enables them to create their own stories, drawing upon their experiences or not, in a way that feels safe. We wanted to make sure that there's nothing triggering or re-traumatizing about this process, but it feels useful and playful and empowering for them. So we, as I said, we devised a kind of virtual workshop I put together with an assistant. We packaged a virtual workshop so that facilitators based in Ukraine can enable the children to write their stories and draw upon the fairy tale of Mavka.
And Igor, for those of us who haven't encountered that name Mavka before, she's a sort of, I don't know how you'd say it, but a kind of Rapunzel-like character, if you like, pretty much known to everybody in Ukraine.
Yeah, everyone knows Mavka in Ukraine, and actually it's one kind of fairy tale which is very popular, very famous, and very kind. So during such period, children want to have something warm, something beauty in their life, and they concentrate on fairy tales. So it was like powerful that our activities plus possibility to make a science plus possibility to help the children. So it was a great combination, and actually I was surprised how it appears. No, I'm still wondering how it's happened, just because during the war it was maybe a 0% of probability that something could happen like this. So what it mean also for me, it's like some change, some opportunity, and also a very good doings for children.
So where are you at with Mavka now? Because I think you started gathering data in May. Mattia?
Yeah, so essentially a few months ago, our friends in Ukraine started gathering some preliminary data. So what they did is that they took the workshop that Carolyn mentioned, so which is essentially a sort of roadmap of how some facilitator can start helping a child write their stories. And they did this in the school. We've started collecting videos of children who, after interacting with this adults, they wrote their own stories. And so we've got now this small collection of some of them very touching stories of children telling their stories to the camera. And that gives us a great initial data, let's say, to start building the vision of where we want to go forward after this.
What's the vision, Igor? How big can this be? Because obviously, as you've just mentioned, there is a great need for this now, and we'd all hope that that need would diminish in the near future, but there's still going to be need for it.
We are interested to continue such approach, not only just for collecting, but also the storytelling and such kind of analyzing helps during the process of collecting. So nevertheless, we continue such kind of work. The next steps is to make the better understanding of the behavior of children, their changing of minds during the period, just because it's a long-term perspective to understand what's happened, how the whole situation will affect the children, and we need the data. Unfortunately, we have a unique chance to get such kind of data during the war period, we get this possibility to collect.
Carolyn, I can see this has got enormous potential, not just in Ukraine, but what are the hurdles that you still have to surmount to make the best of this? I imagine there are ethical issues, for instance.
Yes, we have to navigate certain hurdles in terms of ethical considerations, how we manage the groups, how we get them to write stories that are written in a safe space, for instance, that they're not re-triggering. It's one of the sort of broader challenges in using creative writing for mental health or trauma is to make sure that it's done in a way that doesn't re-trigger or make anyone feel worse. So that is definitely one of them. Making sure that the facilitators are able to work effectively with the children, that children are enabled to write their stories and not just repeat existing stories, but to feel that they can dig into their own imagination and their own experiences.
Mathieu, same for you?
Absolutely. I think this is obviously the bigger challenges, I would say. There's technological challenges. So the vision that Igor outlined is very large. There would be a lot of things to do. We want to develop that software. We need to spend a lot of effort towards this, and there's a lot to validate. Can we create this software that can help children tell their stories? How does that look like? How does the dialogue look like? Can we then do the analysis that help detect or prevent, let's say, distress and flag it up to a therapist? There's a lot of proof of concept that have been done in labs over the recent years, but deploying this on the real field, with children raises some new issues, some technological, a lot ethical and practical. A very exciting prospect, and to be able to have that kind of impact.
I can sense all of you are very excited about this, and clearly this is all stemmed from the Crucible experience. I wondered if each of you had any thoughts about how this has changed your views of multidisciplinary collaboration. I guess you were all in favour of it, otherwise you'd never have done Crucible in the first place. But has it made you realise even more the idea that what can happen if you get bright people together who would not normally meet and hothouse some ideas?
To me, it didn't change much. It made it even clearer. Break out of your comfort zone, meet people of disciplines that you would not usually meet. And always something is going to come up out of this. You will take away something from this at the very least.
Mel?
For me, there are always challenges in every project. And you mentioned ethics, for example. And that's something, doing a project like this, people will say, that's going to be difficult, or there might be problems getting it right, getting the ethics agreements and everything. And I think, these things can be challenging, but we've learned a lot from it. Where there's a will to do something really important like this, there's a way to do it. And the team's worked really well together to enable that to happen, I think. And the supporting teams that we've had around us as well, in terms of our university officers and helping that to happen as well.
Eagle?
I believe that real truth in everything, especially in science, is situated on the only interdisciplinary approach when you concentrate not only some very small and precisely constrained task, but you try to connect everything in a very, very deep and wide net of perimeters and connections. So you can consider not everything, but as much as possible. And in those aspects, you get the most effective solution, and you can be most effective like a researcher and scientist.
Mel, can you give us an overview of what the whole thing has been like from not knowing anything and going into Crucible to where you are now with MAFCA?
It was a great experience. I found it, I was looking forward to going into it right from the selection process and, you know, meeting everyone, all the speed dating and everything was fantastic. And then, of course, we to win the pitching contest was really lovely as well. I was very lucky to meet the people that I met. I think Igor was really compelling in his description of what was going on for the people in Ukraine, and that really helped, I think, us all to fire our imaginations.
If anybody's hearing this and thinking about whether to apply to some future Eurocrucible, what would you say?
I would say go into it with an open mind. You don't know what kind of people that you might meet. There are a mixture of people. You know, there may be more in physical sciences, but there are other social scientists there as well. It's there for everyone, and just try to get the most out of it that you can, because I think we've had a lot of interest from this study that will then help us to, you know, extend it on further. And so it's the start of great things, I think.
The start of great things and the end of great podcasts. Well, this podcast anyway. That was Dr. Mel McKendrick, Associate Professor in Psychology at Heriot Watt. And other members of the MAFCA team you heard from are Dr. Carolyn Jess Cook, poet, novelist and reader in creative writing at the University of Glasgow. And also at Glasgow, Dr. Mathias Chollet, a lecturer in healthcare technologies in the School of Computing Sciences. And the final member of the team is Dr. Igor Tereshenko, a researcher in Ukraine, and as he puts it, everything concerning artificial intelligence. That is the end of this particular MAFCA tale, but there are four more in this first batch of European Crucible True Stories. And if you found this, either Hunchback of Notre Dame, you can find the others.